This is Precepts Audio Message PA23. Nathan C. Johnson, Bible Teacher. For all those who love our Lord Jesus Christ in truth. Okay, the book of Daniel. We've seen Daniel go all the way through from Nebuchadnezzar's first year and the first captivity, which was carried out of Jerusalem. Daniel was a young man of about 17 years of age. Up through a full 70 years of the kingdom of Babylon and up to the point where Persia, under Darius the Median, comes in and takes over the empire and becomes the Persian Empire rather than the Babylonian Empire. Now we move on to Daniel chapter 7. And here is really the midway point in the book and also the major break in the book. Here we go from what's largely been history through the first six chapters, although we did have one vision of the future in chapter 2, to now the second half of the book, which is largely visions of the future and Daniel's visions and him seeing visions that God gives him of things that are yet to come. And in many ways, the second half of the book of Daniel is comparable to the book of Revelation. And in fact, I don't think you can understand the book of Revelation without having in mind the background of this book of Daniel and the things it has to say, particularly about that period that we call the tribulation. Now, this seventh chapter is still in Chaldean. It's still in Aramaic. And this connects it to the first half of the book. But remember, the first chapter was in Hebrew. And then chapters 8 through 12 are also in Hebrew. Well, this is continuing on, and in many ways it's explaining further details about the vision of Nebuchadnezzar in chapter 2. So we read in verse 1, "In the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel had a dream and visions of his head upon his bed. Then he wrote the dream and told the sum of the matters." So this dream is actually in the first year of Belshazzar. And so it's before the fall of Babylon. And Daniel has this dream and visions of his head upon his bed. So it's called dream and visions. So he sees these things, and this is a message from God, and then he writes down the dream, and he tells the substance of the words that were given him by God. So Daniel spoke, in this case he speaks in writing of the things he saw in his vision. Daniel spoke and said, "I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of the heavens drove upon the great sea." So four winds. But in Chaldean, this is ruach, the same word as we have in Hebrew ruach, which is spirit. And the word for spirit and the word for wind is the same in Hebrew and also here in Chaldean. So these are four winds or four spirits striving on the great sea. Of course, we're used to winds blowing from the north, the south, the east, or the west, the four winds we call them. But we don't really see these four winds all blowing at the same time and striving together. But this is what we see, is these winds from all four directions are blowing upon the sea. And of course, this would cause a great upheaval in the sea if all four winds are blowing against each other all at once. Now, the sea, the Great Sea, is probably the Mediterranean Sea. That's what's generally viewed as the Great Sea in the Bible, because that was the Great Sea of that part of the world, was the Mediterranean. But the sea is also often symbolic for the sea of peoples. And the peoples of the world are pictured as a sea, is always constantly in motion and upheaval, as the nations and the peoples often are. Then verse 3, "And four great beasts came up from the sea, diverse from one another." So these four beasts come up from the sea. And they don't necessarily come up in succession and one take place of the other. As we saw in the vision in chapter 2, I believe that these beasts are existing concurrently. Although certainly one may rise first and one second and one third and one fourth, but they aren't arising and taking place of the previous one. They're all there by the end. They're all there at the same time. So, again, this is not a good picture of Persia being taken over by Greece, being taken over by Rome, or anything like that. Certainly not a good picture of Babylon, which is already on the decline. And it's far too late to picture Babylon arising at this point. That's what a lot of people want to make the first out to be Babylon. Well, Babylon has long since arisen. And this would be no vision of the future. But regardless, these all exist at the same time, which certainly the Greek Empire didn't exist, nor the Roman at this point. Although certainly the Persian and the Babylonian did exist together at this point. But this does not fit with what was going on then, and I believe that this all has to do with future, and this has to do with things that will take place in the tribulation and the revolt against the kingdom. So these four beasts come up out of the sea of humanity, and they're different from one another. Now in verse 4 we read of the first one. The first was like a lion. Now this is not a lion, but it was like a lion. The first was like a lion and had eagle's wings. I beheld till the wings thereof were plucked, and it was lifted up from the earth and made stand upon the feet as a man, and a man's heart was given to it. So this first is a lion, or like a lion, and yet it has eagle's wings. And of course, lions don't have wings. So this is a very strange lion. This is a very supernatural looking thing. A lion with wings like an eagle. But then the wings are plucked off. Well, that would make it look more like a lion, except then it's lifted up on its feet and made to stand like a man, and a man's heart is given to it. So it would seem to become more like a lion once you take the wings off, but then it becomes more like a man than like a lion. It's made to stand on its feet like a man, it's given a heart like a man. So this describes this beast, this very odd beast. We read the second, verse 5, and behold, another beast, the second, like to a bear. And it raised up itself on one side, and it had three ribs in the mouth of it between the teeth of it. And they said thus unto it, arise, devour much flesh. So the second is a bear raised up on one side. And it has three ribs in its mouth and between its teeth, and it's told to devour much flesh. So it's a flesh-devouring bear. Bears are basically scavengers, and this bear is pictured as devouring flesh. So a little bit of an odd behavior for a bear. Generally, it would be more likely to eat dead things and things that could scavenge than to kill and devour flesh. So verse 6, after this I beheld, and lo, another like a leopard, which had upon the back of it four wings of a fowl. The beast also had four heads, and dominion was given to it. So this third beast looks like a leopard, except again, it has some very unleopard-like features, which is it has four wings upon its back, like a bird's wings, and it also has four heads. So this would be a very strange leopard with four bird's wings and four heads. And dominion was given to it. So this has dominion and authority. Now, some people try to compare this with Greece and the fact that after Alexander the Great died, that the Greek kingdom split into four. But other than the number four, that's the only way that this is in any way similar to Greece. This does not match with the Greek Empire. It doesn't seem to fit with anything that went on in the Greek Empire, and certainly the Greek Empire wasn't concurrent with these other things. This does not fit with things that went on in the past. And remember that the higher critics always want to make Daniel be talking about things that already happened and be written after these things had happened and basically be a forgery that's pretending to predict things that had already taken place when it was written. So they're wanting to make these things all be symbolic of these empires in the past because they want Daniel to be a forgery. Now, we believe that Daniel truly wrote this, and we believe he was predicting future events. And I see no reason why we should compromise with the higher critics and make these all to be events in the past. I believe these are future things and things that will take place in the tribulation. So these are the first three beasts, and then we come to the fourth, which is very different and very odd. Verse 7, he says, after this I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible and strong exceedingly, and it had great iron teeth. It devoured and brake in pieces and stamped the residue with the feet of it, and it was diverse from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. So he mentions this, after this I saw in the night visions, and it almost, to me, the idea of a nightmare, like this vision takes on nightmare quality at this point because of the terribleness of this beast. So this fourth beast is dreadful and terrible and exceedingly strong. And we're not told exactly what it looked like other than it had great iron teeth. So iron teeth on this beast. And obviously creatures don't have iron teeth. So this is a very weird, almost a mechanical type thing. It has iron teeth. And it devours and breaks in pieces. So it's a destroyer. Stamp the residue with the feet of it. So it's stamping on these on things, destroying. And it was diverse from all the beasts that were before it. So it's different from all other beasts. And we read it had 10 horns. So 10 horns upon its head. And as he was looking at the horns, apparently these are a very notable feature. Verse 8, I considered the horns, and behold, there came up among them another little horn, before whom were 3 of the first horns plucked up by the roots. And behold, in this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking great things. So he's looking at the horns, and all of a sudden this little horn comes up, and it plucks up 3 of the other horns by the roots. And he sees it has eyes like the eyes of a man on this horn, and has a mouth speaking great things. So that would be a very strange horn if we try to imagine a horn on an animal with eyes like a man and a mouth speaking great things. So it would seem, of course, that this horn would symbolize a human being, as all the horns did. But very odd beast and a very terrible beast, and kind of a nightmare, this dreadful fourth beast that arises. So verse 9, I beheld till the thrones were cast down, and the Ancient of Days did sit, whose garment was white as snow, and the hair of his head like the pure wool. His throne was like the fiery flame, and his wheels as burning fire. Now, here he is beholding this vision until finally the thrones are cast down. And I think here we're getting a hint of the fact that these four beasts are symbolizing thrones, they're symbolizing governmental powers. And the thrones are cast down when the Ancient of Days comes and sits. And there's no doubt about it, I believe that this Ancient of Days is Jesus Christ. And this coming and sitting is speaking of his second coming, resulting in his parousia, his coming to earth, to be on earth and reign for 1,000 years. He's described with a garment white as snow, and the hair of his head is like pure wool. And if we go ahead to the book of Revelation, and we consider the description of Jesus Christ, we look at Revelation chapter 1, describing Jesus Christ, starting in verse 12, it says, And I turned to see the voice that spake with me. And being turned, I saw 7 golden candlesticks. And in the midst of the 7 candlesticks was one like unto the Son of Man, clothed with a garment down to the foot, and girt about the paps with a golden girdle. His head and his hairs were white like wool, as white as snow, and his eyes were as a flame of fire. So here Jesus Christ is being described, and he's described as having hair white like snow. And here in Daniel chapter 1 and verse 9, it's talking about his hair like pure wool. Again, pure wool, the idea being white. So his throne is like the fiery flame, and his wheels is burning fire. And this reminds us of chapter 1 of Ezekiel, where God is described, and accompanying him are these strange wheels, the whirling wheels that had the spirit of the living creatures in them that were following the throne around, following the creatures around that stood around the throne. And so it mentions his wheels. So there's no doubt about it. This is a picture of Jehovah, a picture of God, and ultimately a picture of Jesus Christ, I believe. So verse 10, a fiery stream issued and came forth from before him. 1,000 thousands ministered unto him, and 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. The judgment was set, and the books were opened. So this fiery stream issues and comes forth from before this one. And this fiery stream, I believe, is probably symbolic for judgment. Fire, when it's used for metals, it judges, it tests the metal, and it divides the good metal from the dross, the pure from the dross. And so fire is often symbolic for judgment. So this fiery stream of judgment issues from before him, and certainly that will be the way it will be at his second coming. He will judge. And thousands, as it puts in the King James, or millions, as we would say in American English, they're ministering unto him. And 10,000 times 10,000, which of course 10,000 times 10,000 is 100 million standing before him. And I don't know that these numbers are technically exact. They're just speaking of the huge number of ministers and of servants that stand before him. So his judgment is set. Basically, he took his judgment seat is the idea. And books were open, and out of these books, judgment is going to be made. Again, makes us think of other passages that speak of judgment and the books before God, like the book of life and so forth. Well, here there are books from which people are going to be judged, the records from which they're going to be judged. Verse 11, I beheld then because of the voice of the great words which the horn spake, I beheld even till the beast was slain and his body destroyed, and given to the burning flame. So now he's seen the Ancient of Days come and sit in judgment. And just because he sits in judgment doesn't necessarily mean he has to sit down on a chair and stay there. And he's basically settling himself to judge. And clearly one of the first ones he's going to judge is this horn, because this horn has been doing some very bad things. So he beholds, his attention is drawn back to this horn and its voice, which is speaking great words. And he watches this horn, but the beast to which the horn belongs is slain, and his body is destroyed and given to the burning flame. And this is the first outcome of the Ancient of Days sitting and sitting for judgment. Now, regarding verse 12, as concerning the rest of the beasts, they had their dominion taken away, yet their lives are prolonged for a season and time. Now this is a strange thing, especially if we consider, as I do, that all of these beasts are kingdoms that arise during the tribulation period. And basically the kingdoms that arise during the tribulation should not be arising. The tribulation is a period where God turns off the kingdom controls and allows all men to walk again after their own ways. Now the command for God's people is to continue as if he had not shut off the power, to continue obeying the laws of the kingdom, continue obeying the rulers he set up, continue doing the things that he demands and commands. And so these kingdoms that arise in the tribulation actually rise up in rebellion against God and his kingdom and his commands. So it seems kind of odd that these three other beasts are allowed to continue. They are punished, but their sentence is somewhat commuted. They're allowed to be prolonged for a season at a time, perhaps to judge them based on their behavior before making a final determination regarding them. Now, I believe that there is somewhat of a progression of a rebellion in the tribulation, and that is that at first, men are simply sort of feeling their oats, if you will, filling out their way now that God is no longer commanding and controlling everything, and maybe just breaking the laws that don't make sense to them or that they don't personally like or enjoy. I think it's particularly difficult regarding the second beast, which is said to devour much flesh. Certainly we can see why this destructive beast, the last one, would be destroyed, but why would not the second one, which is devouring much flesh? Well, of course, it's hard to say for sure, and it's hard to say what any of these beasts really symbolize other than that they are kings. They are rulers that arise during this tribulation period. But we don't know exactly what this bear in the flesh in its mouth means. And I've wondered and I've speculated if perhaps we certainly know that animals are going to stop eating meat in the kingdom. It talks about things like the wolf and the lamb being together and so forth, and the lion eating grass like an ox. So it appears that animals are no longer going to be carnivorous. Now, whether humans are going to be carnivorous or not in the kingdom, it's hard to say. It may be that we too will become vegetarians again. But we know one thing that Christ sets forth in Matthew 24 about the tribulation is that there will be famines. And, of course, there won't be famines all throughout the kingdom, but in the tribulation there will be famines again. So it makes me wonder if maybe this kingdom is one that arises and says, well, let's start eating meat again. And so maybe this devouring much flesh doesn't have to do with people, but it has to do with animals. in which case is bear, although it would appear quite terrible if what it's devouring is people. Perhaps this just has to speak of a kingdom that decides the way to deal with these famines is to start eating meat again. And that is against the kingdom commands. Now, of course, that's all somewhat wild speculation, I have to admit. I certainly don't know that humans are going to stop eating meat in the kingdom, so I certainly don't know if what this kingdom is all about is rebelling and going back to eating meat. But that's a guess, at least. But certainly we don't know for sure what these three kingdoms are and what they stand for, or any more than we do what the fourth kingdom is for sure, and what it stands for, although we'll learn more about the fourth kingdom as we go through this book of Daniel. But at any rate, it would seem that these three kingdoms, their rebellion, although it's deserving of at least some punishment, does not utterly destroy these first three beasts. Their lives are prolonged for a season and a time. Certainly they're not rewarded, but they aren't destroyed either, like the final beast was. So then verse 13, he says, I saw in the night visions, and behold, one like the Son of Man came with the clouds of heaven, and came to the Ancient of Days, and they brought him near before him. And there was given him dominion and glory and a kingdom, that all people, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion which shall not pass away, and his kingdom that which shall not be destroyed. Now here you have a difficulty, because I said back in verse 9, it appears to me, and I believe that the Ancient of Days is Jesus Christ, this one with his head, hair of his head like wool, and his white garments, and the flames, and the wheels, and so forth, that this is Jehovah, that this is Jesus Christ. Well, if that's the case, then who's this Son of Man who comes with the clouds of heaven and appears before him? Appears before the Ancient of Days. Because we look at that, and it looks like the Son of Man would be Jesus Christ. Well, in that case, you have to make the Ancient of Days the Father, but then we'd have the coming of the Father. And this would be something that would certainly have nowhere else in Scripture. And when we remember what Jesus Christ said to Philip, that if you've seen me, you've seen the Father, it doesn't make much sense that the Father would come to earth and be visibly present and so forth. And I believe, like I said, that all through the Old Testament, the one called Jehovah is actually Jesus Christ, the one who appears in the visions of Ezekiel and so forth, that that's Jesus Christ. Well, if that's the case, who's this Son of Man? Well, remember that the term Son of Man is not just used for Jesus Christ. Ezekiel is called Son of Man in the Old Testament. So human beings besides Jesus Christ could be called Son of Man. This just means representative of man. Well, Jesus Christ was certainly the Son of Man. There are others that can be called that too. What about this reference to coming with clouds of heaven, being given a dominion and glory and a kingdom and all this? Well, I think there is another one, a human being, whom this could fit. And not Jesus Christ, but rather the man David. Certainly as we read through the book of Ezekiel and even in Jeremiah and in other places, we read that David has a great future in the kingdom of God. That David is to be set up as a king, and David is called the prince in Ezekiel. David becomes the prince in Israel, and he rules over Israel on earth as Christ rules over Israel from heaven. But one of the first things that happens, I believe, in the tribulation is that David is forced out of his realm. He's forced off the throne. As nations start to rebel, the first thing they want to do is rebel against Israel, which has always had the preeminence in the kingdom. And David is forced off his throne, and he's been forced to flee and forced to go off into the mountains with the others, I believe with the 12 and the rest, like in Matthew 24. And he's been cut off from Jerusalem for a time, cut off from his throne. His dominion has come to an end. So I believe this Son of Man is David. He comes with the clouds of heaven. He comes with a great company accompanying him to stand before Jesus Christ, the Ancient of Days. He's brought near before him, and Christ basically gives him back dominion, the dominion that he lost in the tribulation, and indeed gives him glory and power and a kingdom over all other peoples and nations and languages. And his kingdom from this point continues everlastingly, olam. And it does not come to an end. Never again is David forced off his throne. Never again does his dominion and his rule that God has given him come to an end. Never again is David forced off his throne. Of course, he was forced off at once already by death. He'll be forced off it again in the tribulation by rebellion. But once Christ sets him back on the throne in the Parousia, he will never be forced off it again. So I believe that this is talking about the man David. So verse 15, I, Daniel, was grieved in my spirit in the midst of my body, and the visions of my head troubled me. So these things troubled Daniel. He was grieved. He was upset. He didn't really understand what was going on. So verse 16, I came near unto one of them that stood by and asked him the truth of all this. So he told me and made me know the interpretation of the things. So he speaks of those who stood by. Apparently there were some standing near him as he was watching all these things take place. And maybe these were some of those who stood before the Ancient of Days back in verse 10. So he asks this one to tell him the truth of all this, tell him what's going on. So he gives him the interpretation. And again, it's very important when God gives us the interpretation of a thing that we don't try to interpret the interpretation. The interpretation is not symbolic. The interpretation is the interpretation. It's not a second parable or a second vision that we're supposed to then interpret. So this is the interpretation. Verse 17. These great beasts, which are four kings, which shall arise out of the earth. So the four beasts are four kings. They're four rulers that are going to arise in this time of the tribulation. Verse 18. But the saints of the Most High shall take the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever, even forever and ever. So these four kings arise, and yet they don't prevail. They rise out of the earth, and yet ultimately the saints, the holy ones, the set apart ones of the Most High, will come and they'll or shall take the kingdom. They'll take the government, they'll take it away from these rebellious beasts, and they'll possess it from then on, in perpetuity for the outflow and from then on. And so never again is their rule interrupted. So verse 19, then I would know the truth of the fourth beast, which was diverse from all the others, exceeding dreadful, whose teeth were of iron and his nails of brass, which devoured, brake in pieces, and stamped the residue with his feet. So here we're seeing a review. Daniel wants to know about this fourth beast. He's learned that the beasts are four kings that arise out of the earth, but then the saints of the Most High come and take the kingdom. Well, then he wants to know about this fourth beast because it was so different from all the others and it was so notable. And here we start to get some details about this beast that he hadn't mentioned earlier. We saw that its teeth were iron before, and now we find out its nails are brass. And then verse 20, and of the 10 horns that were in his head, and of the other which came up, and before whom 3 fell, even of that horn that had eyes and a mouth that spoke very great things, whose look was more stout than his fellows. So again, repeating things we already know, but we see he looks more stout, he looks stronger than the other horns. And again, this is supplemental material he didn't say before. And the same thing is true of 21 and 22. We found out more we didn't know before. Verse 21, I beheld, and the same horn made war with the saints and prevailed against them until the Ancient of Days came and judgment was given to the saints of the Most High. And the time came that the saints possessed the kingdom. So he sees and he's watching, and this little horn on this fourth beast, he's making war with the saints and he's winning. He's prevailing against them. And that's because the saints of God are not empowered in the tribulation. God's power is not there. And yet this little horn is being empowered by Satan. So he's warring against the saints, God set apart ones, and he's winning. Verse 22, until the Ancient of Days came, and judgment was given to the saints of the Most High, and the time came that the saints possessed the kingdom. So here we have the Ancient of Days coming. And before I said he descended, and I guess technically it doesn't say he descended, it just says he came. Again, I believe this is the second coming of Jesus Christ. The Ancient of Days comes here, and his coming brings an end to this little horn prevailing over the saints. Because when he comes, judgment is given to the saints of the Most High. And if we'd read in the book of Zechariah, we'd read that Christ empowers his rulers then, including David and probably the 12 and the others who were rulers over Israel at that point, makes them into his army and makes them basically super soldiers to go and destroy this army of the little horn. And so, yes, judgment was given unto them, and they were vindication to go and destroy the army and destroy this fourth wicked kingdom. And then they possess it, and possess it through the Ancient of Days, through Jesus Christ empowering them to do so. So verse 23, now this one who stands by is going to explain this fourth kingdom to him. Thus he said, the fourth beast shall be the fourth kingdom upon earth, which shall be diverse from all kingdoms, and shall devour the whole earth, and shall tread it down and break it in pieces. Now this fourth beast, again, I do not believe that this fourth beast is Rome. lot of people try to make this out. In fact, the whole idea of the restored Roman Empire is based on Daniel chapter 7. 130 years ago, something like that, someone wrote a book and said that this fourth beast was the Roman Empire, and since it existed at the time of the end, that means the Roman Empire has to be restored. And somehow that became orthodoxy. I don't believe this has anything to do with Rome. This fourth beast is actually the last kingdom, the kingdom of the Antichrist, ultimately the kingdom of Satan, that arises as the culmination of this rebellion that takes place during the tribulation. And it's different from all other kingdoms. I believe it's different because ultimately this is Satan's kingdom, and it's empowered and controlled by Satan. And it says it devours the whole earth. That doesn't necessarily fit with what we read about the Antichrist. He does have opposition, especially as we read in chapter 11. But remember, the word for earth and the word for land is the same word in Hebrew. And while I'm not as familiar with Chaldean, I would guess it's the same thing here. He does devour the land of Israel, and we can see him doing that in Daniel chapter 11. Although he does have enemies. And he treads it down and breaks it in pieces. So he's causing all kinds of trouble, particularly in the land of Israel. And then verse 24, and the 10 horns out of this kingdom are 10 kings that shall arise, and another shall rise after them, and he shall be diverse from the first, and he shall subdue 3 kings. So whereas the other 3 beasts were, as far as we could tell, 1 king over a kingdom, this kingdom has 10 horns, or 10 kings that are ruling over it. And then another arises who's different from the first 10, and he basically subdues or humbles 3 of them and takes his place as ruling over this fourth beast. Verse 25, and he shall speak great words against the Most High, and shall wear out the saints of the Most High, and think to change times and laws, and they shall be given into his hand until a time and times and the dividing of a time. So this little horn, this king, and ultimately I believe he's the Antichrist, he speaks great words against the Most High, against God. So he speaks against God, and he wears out the saints of the Most High. He afflicts them, basically. He's afflicting them. He's working against them in every way he can. And he's working to change times and laws. He's working to change the way things are done in Israel. And as we see, Christ says that he sets up the abomination of desolation in the temple. So he's seeking to change the worship of God, change the laws of God, and mess everything up and set it up according to his order and his way. And yet these things are given into his hand. And he gets dominion over things, gets dominion even over the temple and the worship of God that goes on there. And this happens for time and times and the dividing of a time. And I believe you have time, that's one, and times, that's 2, so 1 plus 2 is 3, and then the dividing of a time, that's half, that's 3.5 years. And I believe this is the last 3.5 years of that last seven-year period of Daniel's prediction in chapter 9, which we'll be reading later. And these last 3.5 years are called the Great Tribulation. There's an extended period that's the tribulation, and the Great Tribulation, which is the great test when everything kind of comes to a head, and it's the final conflict, the final showdown of this period takes place over 3.5 years. And during this 3.5 years, worship in the temple is stopped by this little horn, and he sets himself up and takes control of it and changes the law. And this goes on for 3.5 years, the last 3.5 years of this period. Then verse 26, but the judgment shall sit, and they shall take away his dominion to consume and to destroy it unto the end. So again, I believe that this whole tribulation period comes about because God removes his power from the earth and allows men to walk in their own ways again after having had control of the earth for many years in his kingdom. But the tribulation ends when God, again, when Jesus Christ again takes his seat to judge. And that doesn't mean he sits down on a chair. That means he puts himself in the place to judge the earth once again, to set things in order, to set things right on the earth once again. Because he has not been doing that for an extended period of time here while he's allowed the tribulation and the great test to go on. But once he sits in the judgment place again, well, certainly there's no room for this little horn anymore. The judgment shall sit, and they shall take away his dominion to consume and to destroy it unto the end. So God's judgment is that the dominion is taken away from this little horn, from this last beast, and his dominion is consumed and destroyed unto the uttermost part of it. It's completely wiped out, and he and all his followers are destroyed. So verse 27, and the kingdom and the dominion
and the greatness of the kingdom under the whole heaven shall be given to the people of the saints of the Most High, whose kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and all dominion shall serve and obey him. So the government and the dominion and the greatness of the government under the whole heaven, on the whole earth, are given to the people of the saints of the Most High. God's people rule with him. So it isn't just Christ on his throne ruling alone. He's ruling with his people. You see the same thing in Revelation chapter 20. And his kingdom is Olam. It goes on forever. It doesn't come to an end. And all other dominions on earth serve and obey him. And they're brought back under service and dominion, under his dominion, after they've revolted. Of course, they were all under his dominion in the kingdom. Then they revolted. Now they're brought back under his dominion, this time for good. So verse 28, hitherto is the end of the matter. As for me, Daniel, my cogitations much troubled me, and my countenance changed in me, but I kept the matter in my heart. So this whole thing troubled Daniel. It baffled him. He didn't know what to think, and his countenance changed. It was like his whole bearing changed. This affected him deeply. But he kept it in his heart. He kept quiet about it, and he just wrote it down as we have it now in the book of Daniel. And we can read it. In many ways, you don't understand all these things and probably won't until the tribulation comes. And we see these four kingdoms, and then we can say, aha, so that's why it was a lion with wings. It all makes sense now. Well, it may not make sense to us now. It probably won't make sense to us until that time comes, or at least until God reveals more information to us in his kingdom as we're getting closer to these things actually taking place. So that's the seventh chapter of the book of Daniel, and the first of these great visions. Visions of end times, particularly of the tribulation period, and then the parousia, the return of Christ, and the beginning of the parousia that we see here in the book of Daniel. And we'll go on to chapter 8 and the second great vision in our next study, but for now we're out of time.